Yeah, I mentioned that I would be giving a sermon on marriage. I actually was going to give this first in Kansas City, but because of Brexit, I gave that sermon and then followed it up over here. We actually did have a sermon on marriage by Mr. Gore when he was in the area. He came through, I believe it was at the end of May, the first part of June, that he came through and gave a sermon on marriage. But I haven't given one in some time. And as I start to give this sermon, I want to make a disclaimer. And that is that there's no way when you give a marriage sermon that you can get into specifics that are always going to be correct. So I'm going to try to get away from specifics. The Bible has enough to say about marriage, but you know, when it gets into the home life and how people interact, when it gets into cultures, you really wouldn't want to live in the time of Abraham with that culture. You wouldn't want to actually live in the time of of George Washington and Marcia. You read about men there who were high-ranking, powerful men who made decisions without their wife ever knowing, and they would be then going overseas with their wife and part of their family for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, and they never do counsel with their wife because she's the wife. That's just not part of her role. It's amazing the differences depending on the time in which you live. So today, I'm sure that Abraham, well, God and all of us are amazed at what goes on in marriages and how things have flip-flopped. So there definitely are principles that we must follow in order to have a successful marriage. So I actually have called this the laws of marriage. And I was looking back at ceremony that we use when two individuals vow or make a covenant with God. And at the very end, when you start to make that covenant, it talks about in the ceremony the immutable laws of God, the unchangeable laws of God that will govern the marriage. There are absolute principles. There can be variations, and I don't know if you are familiar with the Prepare and Enrich program. The church has used this, although it's not perfect, but it gives general guidelines. But it talks about people's background, the male, the female, what the mother was like, what the father was like, so that you know when you get married a little bit more of what to expect out of your mate, what she should expect out of you, vice versa, of course, so that you're not totally shocked. So we know that we all need God's Spirit in order for a marriage to be successful, because there's a lot of things happen in marriage that have nothing to do with sin. Nothing to do with sin. In other words, it's not broken law. You just get used to, well, mom did it this way, dad did it this way, and so we expect the other person to be that way. And it's not going to happen. As much as we could date someone for 10 years trying to get to know them, live in the same town, grow up in the same school, date them forever, and yet when you get married, it's going to be different. It just is. So the first law is marriage is a spiritual union. Marriage is a spiritual union. And when I'm counseling individuals before they get married, even though I may give them the Prepare and Enrich program, and I won't do it, by the way, if they're just thinking about getting married and they've dated for 1 month and they've been on internet with each other, you know, back and forth, living 2,000 miles away, and now they know each other, I won't even give them a Prepare and Enrich because they just don't know. We had a case, just to give you an example, in New Jersey where there were two people who lived 100 miles apart. And he would come up and visit her. And they were doing this for about 3, 4, 5, 6 months, actually, but they were still 100 miles apart. And they wanted to prepare and enrich. She had been down there. He lived with his mother. Actually, his mother lived with him. And so she stayed overnight with him one time in a proper way. Again, the mother was there, separate rooms and all. And on the Prepare and Rich, before she had gone down there, Prepare and Rich showed that they were a perfect match. I mean, you couldn't find someone who agreed on more things exactly the same. She goes down there, and Sunday morning, the papers are on the table, and she comes out, and he's there reading the paper. She grabs a section of the paper, and he said, "Put that down, I haven't read it yet." What did she do? That was it. She broke off the marriage. Should she have? And I said, yeah. That'd be a tremendously controlling husband that she would have. But you wouldn't find out until, what do you mean, put that down? I haven't read it yet. Who are you? Well, I'm Chief Umbala Uba, you know, or whatever you are. Don't step in the Umbala, but read the joke. You just have to get to know each other. Those surprises can come along, but I'll tell you, if you're going to marry someone and they're that controlling, it's going to be tough, right? That would really be tough. He would need a lot of breaking in to do. I said he in this case because that would be the problem. So anyway, marriage is a spiritual union, and beside just any major problem, there are going to be minor problems that are not sin. They're just not sin at all. They're just little things that come along, and there are misunderstandings, and as much as we try to communicate, the English language is not perfect at all. Plus, when you get as old as me, you start losing your hearing, and then if two people lose their hearing, it even gets worse because you're trying to communicate, and you both, think you heard each other. Plus, now we start having memory loss. As we get older, that's when we're 90, of course. So you can imagine the complications. We have 50 years where we're totally alert. We have good hearing, good eyesight to get ready for this, but we're not ready for it when it comes along. So we all understand that there are these things happening, and they're not sin, but they still take God's Spirit so that we can be patient with each other, so that we can bear with each other, so that we can be gentle and kind and not get irritated, because marriage is probably the greatest character-building institution on the face of the earth. Besides war, I suppose, builds character, and sports builds character, but it's marriage where you're living together as one flesh, as God says, and you're going to see all of these differences. And as we get into this, I say it's a spiritual union, because if we're not using God's Spirit, we're going to end up like Satan the devil. We don't have perfect people, okay? And I'll explain what I'm saying here. We don't have perfect people. My wife knows that she was not perfect when we got married. I know that we were not perfect. I didn't know it then, of course. I thought she was perfect, and she thought I was perfect. But you expect this perfect, infatuated state that you're in to come out completely right and good forever and ever. And if you take a look at the millennium, where you have rulership by a perfect government, by perfect individuals, we have become perfect, okay? We're in exactly the position that God wants us to be in. We're not going to be making mistakes. We're not going to be sinning in the world tomorrow. And so you have individuals that are there for parts of, or perhaps the whole 1,000-year period. I don't know what God is going to do. And they've been under a perfect administration, and yet they rebel. Yet they rebel. And so you know then, in order to get along with God for all eternity and the spirit beings, the first fruits, you know that there's something more to it than just being in a perfect atmosphere and a perfect government. There's more to it than that. Otherwise, Satan the devil would never have rebelled. So we have to be spiritual ourselves. And if ladies, you had a perfect husband, there'd still be problems. Men, if you had a perfect wife, there'd still be problems. There just would be, because it's a spiritual union, and we have to fight Satan the devil. So I'm going to go to Ephesians 5:32 first. Ephesians 5 and verse 32. And as a minister, I've actually kept track of the marriages that I performed. You know, Albuquerque, starting in 1970, was the first marriage that I performed. In 3 years, four marriages. Denver, Colorado. In 10 months, six marriages. In Pasadena, California. In 14 months, five marriages. In Cleveland, Ohio, in the 6 years we were there, 25 marriages. 25 marriages. In San Antonio, Texas, we were there for 8 years, 23 marriages. And so by that time, by San Antonio, that was 1988, I had performed 63 marriages. You look back on these people, I don't know what's happened to all of them, but I do know that some have yielded to God's Spirit and some have not. And all it takes is one person practicing not yielding to God's Spirit, and the marriage is going to be a failure over a period of time. So Ephesians 5, here it says, this is a great mystery, verse 32. Ephesians 5, 32. This is a great ministry. I speak concerning Christ in the church. Now the mystery is, when you read the preceding verses, that Paul has talked about the role of a husband and the role of the wife. And then he says, it's a great mystery. I'm talking about Christ and the church. Verse 31, immediately leading up to it, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. I'm talking about Christ and the church, is what he said. So we realize then that marriage is a spiritual union. The only way that it's going to be successful from God's standpoint of view is to have God's Spirit, or one person having God's Spirit and the other person being sanctified. So definitely that can work. So we're looking at these things. Or you can take a marriage in the world and where they don't have God's Spirit, and still marriage was to depict Christ in the church. No matter what, that's what marriage is to depict. And it's in marriage, and I believe wholeheartedly that if we're married, and by the way, we don't have to be married to be in God's kingdom. We all understand that. We don't have to be married to be in God's kingdom. And Christ, of course, goes through, or Paul did mention some of those things. I believe that God is looking at marriages, if we're married, to determine, first and foremost, how we're going to act in the kingdom of God. Now, what better relationship to take a look at when you spend so much time together, there's so many opportunities to miscommunicate, to make mistakes, so many opportunities, and God looks at our reaction. And also, he looks at our overcoming, because that's part of it. So God doesn't throw us to the wind immediately. We've been married 50 years, and I can imagine when we were first married, all the mistakes that I personally made. I really thought it was the responsibility of a husband to make his wife submit. I mean, that's what the Bible says. She's supposed to submit, right? So it's got to be your duty as the husband. Well, then you make her submit. Now, I don't mean make her submit by punching her out, you know, or, you know, putting her hands together and see who can take each other down. I think it's best for the husband anyway to be a little stronger than the wife. But whatever the case, you know what I mean. You can go into marriage having a wrong knowledge. In fact, God does say when you get married, we need to have knowledge of how to treat our wife. And doesn't say so, but the wife should have knowledge how to treat her husband, how to live with her husband. So we have this relationship that is so close, and it's a relationship of one flesh, one mind. We know more about each other than anybody else knows about me or my wife. My wife knows more about me, and I know more about her than anybody else except God. And so God looks at both of us, And what he doesn't do is he doesn't give us any exceptions saying, well, you really married a dud, therefore we'll give you a few buys on this one. You know? I know the way she is, and I wouldn't want to be married to her either, so, you know, I'm going to give you 50%. Even though you should have a total F, I'll give you a C. No, God doesn't do that ever. In fact, God wouldn't say that we married a dud. He doesn't have that attitude. Now, in time, any one of us can leave the church, not yield to God's Spirit, and that's between us and God. But coming to that then, we have a union that is a covenant made with God. Do you covenant with God? How many of you actually had a marriage performed in the church? Okay, so a number of you, and you remember, do you covenant with God in the presence of these enemies, these witnesses? Do you covenant with God? And the answer is, covenant with God. That's spiritual. I'm making a covenant with God is what I'm doing. So this is serious. So marriage is a spiritual union. That's law number one. Whether you can call it a law or not, I'll just call it law. That's number one. It is a spiritual union based on the Spirit of God. The second is our main enemy in marriage is not our mate. Our main enemy is Satan the devil. It just is. It's the world's main enemy. And Satan is well able to easily upset any mate he wants to in the world, some easier than others, because if we're on drugs, we can be given over to Satan the devil. Even in the world, people have self-control to a certain extent, and they don't just give themselves totally over to Satan totally. You know, you have stages of Satan's interference in our life. One is total demon possession, but normally that depends on us. And then influence, and that can depend on us too. Going to bed angry? If we go to bed angry, guess what? We are now in a state where we're subject to Satan the devil. It's bad enough to have nightmares anyway. But if we go to bed, and this is why God says, don't let the sun go down on your wrath, not just in marriage, but don't let the sun go down on your math. On your mate. That's another way of being influenced. Being angry and losing control, we're going to be influenced. Did I say drugs? Alcohol. We can be influenced by Satan the devil. So we can be possessed. We can be influenced. And then there's the normal, where there's just living in the world and having thoughts come into our mind. And Satan the devil, it's an open book in the world. So where Satan has that influence. With us, we have to be sure that we're doing what's right in our marriage. Otherwise, Satan the devil gets in there, our prayers are hindered. 1 Peter 3:7. 1 Peter 3:7. Here we find some guidelines on marriage and by Peter, but I'll just go to this one. And of course, it's talking about a wife, and I won't go into all the details. It talks about the submissive wife and the attitude with what Sarah called her husband. She called him Lord. I don't think that would go over in this society. It would not be a term that you would use. I make my wife do it at home, but outside. No, we just don't do that. Some of you probably saw this, one of the series, I forget what it was, one of the BBC British series, and the guy says, M'lady, and she says, M'lord. And it's, but he calls her M'lady, which is also a term of deep respect. But we just don't have those terms. So we're talking about cultures, and we don't, in this society, make people, you know, perform as we might expect other cultures to do. And that's a problem, too, with different cultures marrying. That can create some problems, even the English and the Americans marrying. There's the difference there. And there is going to be a transition period where they have to get even used to the brothers Ephraim and Manasseh getting together. So verse 7, likewise you husbands dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being inheritors together of the grace of life. So we're talking about members of God's church who have God's Spirit. Both are going to inherit eternal life, that your prayers may not be hindered. So if we give ourselves over to the attitude and the spirit of Satan, the devil, our prayers are going to be hindered. That's a spiritual problem. Satan, the devil, can get to us. We don't want our prayers to be hindered by God or coming before God. So we want to follow the laws in marriage, and we always want to remember that. And we need to think about this when some challenge comes along, because in 50 years of marriage, and let me say this too, do not go to counselors who've had 7 divorces, because you think, well, they have really learned a lot. And it's like, there was this fellow down in Australia, and I heard about some people going to Australia to listen to this guy, and his wife also talked. And they were talking about all of the rights and the wrongs in marriage. And 2 years later, they were divorced. So I guess, what was it? I think they collected a lot of money for giving these classes or whatever it was, seminars. It can hit all of us. So when I say with 50 years of marriage, you want to... You don't want to follow kids. You don't want to follow everything that parents do. We can all improve on parents. I improved on mine. If we have parents in the church, we can improve from the start, because we have a good start from our parents, and we can even improve from there. But in 50 years of marriage, I was going to say that we know of all types of problems that come along that are not even sin. Most of the disagreements that my wife and I have had have never involved sin. Most of the disagreements. So you think about that, and you think, we need to learn how to live in peace. We need how to understand one another. Paul, now Peter didn't go on to say, it would have been nice, okay, for Peter to say, or chapter 3, 7a, here is one thing you must understand. B, here's another thing you must understand about living with your wife. C, here's another thing that you must have. And then it would have been good the other way around too. Ladies, you're getting married to a guy here. Here's something you need to understand about guys. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. No, God lets us learn those things, and we have God's Spirit, so that we can be patient, gentle, kind, forbearing, and take it in, you know, make mental notes. You know, this is not something maybe I should do again. Maybe there's some hot point here that I've pressed and I didn't know it was. So again, we learn these things. Okay, the third thing is commitment. Well, actually, let me go to the third, love. Love. It's a law. There's a law of love. There's a law of love. And it's called giving and sharing. It's used in the ceremony. It's called forgiving. Not just giving, but forgiving. And if we don't follow that, then we're going to have problems. I have a scripture down here, and I'm thinking as I look at it why I put that there. I don't know if that's... Oh, yes, of course. Ephesians 4:32. God says, be kind to one another, tender, Ephesians 4:32, forgiving one another, just as God also forgave us. Before that, he talks about not grieving the Holy Spirit, not being bitter, not being wrathful, not being angry, not speaking evil, putting away malice. All of those Christian principles that apply all the time to everyone applies in our marriage. This is what we have to think of. So God is saying, how are you going to be in the kingdom? How are you going to serve? How soon will you get upset? Okay, I'm watching your marriage. How sensitive are you? See, in marriage, we should grow to be not quite as sensitive as we were when we started 50 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it might be. You have to grow in those things. But we have to learn how not to provoke one another also. Because we can provoke and not have any desire to do so. But love is outgoing concern. And we might think when we first get married that we love one another. And we do as much as possible before we get married. It's not like we hate each other or we dislike each other. I won't even ask you to raise your hand if you got married and you disliked each other at the time. I think that may be if your parents decided that the two of you should get married and didn't ask your permission. Normally we think we love each other, but love is tried and tested when there are problems. When there are problems. When everything is going well, and you know, of course, the statement where Jesus Christ, I believe, said, don't the Pharisees even love each other? So when there is a trial that comes along, then we know that the amount of patience we have shows our love towards one another. I think patience is one of the best ones. Honey, can you come here a minute? My wife might say, yeah, I'll be right there. Could you look at this? Yeah. Now, the wife explains things in more detail than the husband does. You know, you get a call, the husband gets a call from the daughter, or the daughter's husband. Oh, that's great. Hangs up. Who was that? Oh, that was our daughter. Did she have the baby? Yeah, she did. Is it a boy or a girl? I don't know. I forgot to ask. How long? I don't know. How much did it weigh? I don't know. Was it healthy? I don't know. Any complications? I don't know. I didn't ask. They had a baby. And it's not, I don't think it's quite that bad. But actually, it works both ways now. And I've often thought when we're in the driver's seat, we don't understand why the one in the passenger seat is upset when we are driving 10 feet behind another vehicle at 100 miles an hour. Why should they be upset? I'm fully in control. And the wife has no control whatsoever. No control of the brake pedal, no control of the steering pedal, but reverse. Put the husband in the passenger seat and the wife, the driver, and all of a sudden, you men look like your wife. That's what happens. And you don't think you'd be that way, but it's amazing. Just being in the driver's seat makes the difference. Now, there's more to marriage than that, of course, and we all, as husbands and wives, have basic characteristics that only males have and only females have. We do know that. But we want to learn to live with one another. So patience is waiting. And our daughter made a statement, I still remember when she was young, that she said, patience takes a long time. Because we would say, Lena, be patient. And that's when she came up. Well, patience takes a long time. Well, that's what the word entails. So when we're with each other, God knows how patient we are based on the way we treat our mate. If we're not patient with our mate, then God sees that right away. And thinks, little work to do there. Little bit of work. So, are you holding hands so you don't hit each other? Is that what you're doing down here? Yeah. But you all know what it's all about. I'll bet you, when you were dating, you had a lot more patience with each other than after you got married. And you know, the Bible says, I think it's Proverbs 30, that there are some strange things that are hard to be understood. And one was a man with his maid. Okay. It's like best foot forward all the time. He doesn't have another foot. It's just the one foot that he's putting forward anyway. No, it's just the way it is. It's human nature. And it's not wrong in dating. I mean, you don't want to just lose your temper, do you? You don't want to do that. It's just that it's going to be natural to do that. It just is. So after we're married, there's that we have to love one another. That is the key. Giving and sharing. Commitment. Commitment is a fourth thing. And I don't even think I labeled these in the sermon that I gave in Kansas City. But the end of the ceremony, it's interesting when you look at what it says in the ceremony. Because marriage is a divine institution and we're asking God to join you as husband and wife, it's fitting and right that each of you should faithfully promise before God to accept the sacred marriage covenant according to the divinely ordained conditions established by Almighty God. Now, in this one, with the man, it says, do you then, man's name, faithfully promise and covenant with God in the presence of these witnesses? So it's basically, I'm signing a covenant with God. I'm not signing a covenant with Marion. I'm signing a covenant with God. And here's what I'm telling God, and it's a covenant with God that I'm making. In the presence of these witnesses, to be your lawful wedded wife, to take, and then the woman's name, to be your lawful wedded wife in sickness and in health. Okay, and we don't think of that when we're 22 years old. I was 22 years old and one day. My birthday is the 25th, marriage is the 26th. And I didn't do that on purpose, that's just the way it fell. But in sickness and in health, and you think, yeah, well, yeah, she'll get over it. Or he'll get over it fairly soon. It's not going to be that bad. But, you know, I've worked with the divorce and marriage committee for years and years and years, and have seen all types of cases where individuals will dump their mate when sickness comes. And I've worked with, there was a situation out in Los Angeles where a woman was married for several years. I had one child, I believe, by that marriage. She fell and she was paralyzed, went to the hospital, and while she was in the hospital, and they had been married several years, husband takes off, leaves her, because she's paralyzed. She was a quadriplegic, paralyzed. Now, I can't remember if he were in the church or not. It seemed to me he was not. I don't think he was. But I've heard of cases where you married 11, 12, 13 years, and the woman might have a stroke, or the man might have a stroke, and gone. Now, I must say that would happen with a male more often than a female. A female is more likely to care for the male. That is just in the nature. And not that every male would leave. They wouldn't. But in these cases, it was a male that just left. Stroke, I'm gone. So sickness and health, you have to think about that. In good times, that's easy. And in difficult times. And so you have to sit down. You can talk about the difficult times. But it's a commitment where you say to yourself when you get married and you're saying to God, when difficult times come, I will be there. Absolutely, I'll be there. For as long as you both shall live. To love her. So it's the husband taking the wife in sickness, health, good times, difficult times. Then to love her, cherish her, honor her, and provide for her. So you think, I'm always going to love her, I'm always going to cherish her. You look up these words, cherish. It's something that is just special. That if it were a physical thing, you would just put on the put out in display. You know, this is what I have here. You display a trophy. This is a, now your mate is not a trophy. The man is not a trophy and the wife is not a trophy. And I've seen some situations where I've thought that that was the case. You know, they were marrying a trophy. But, you cherish something. You want to take care of it. You don't want it to be hurt. You want to make sure that, provision is there, honor is there. And sometimes we don't do that. We live in a society actually that makes fun of each other. And, you know, we can have fun without making fun of each other. You know, you can have fun together. There's a difference. And I have to be careful myself because it's easy for me to joke around. There's an honor that we have to have for our mate. So that's a commitment. This is the commitment we're making. And you know, every time I have gone through this with individuals I've been counseling, I think, man, I've fallen short. I need to do better. Because you're counseling, you're going through this, you're going through all the words, you're spending a couple hours with the person on maybe three occasions or so, and you think, ah. And then, of course, do you, talking to her, faithfully promise and covenant with God in the presence of these witnesses to take, and we're talking about commitment here, to take this man to be your lawful wedded husband, sickness, health, good times, difficult times, for as long as you both shall live, to love him, cherish him, honor him, and as God has ordained, submit yourself to him. I had a situation where a father asked me, would you perform the marriage of my daughter? The daughter was not in the church. I said, yes, but I use the same ceremony. I'm not going to pull any punches, and you'll have to give him a copy of the ceremony. And when the daughter read or heard about the ceremony, it was, no way am I going to submit. That is just not going to happen. That word submit is not in this society. That is so stale, so old, so moth-eaten, so molded that nobody is going to touch it at all. They're just not. But you know, this comes to knowing your roles in the marriage. And if a woman knows what submission means, then it's not going to be that much of a problem. So, in fact, I'll get to that next year. But Colossians chapter 3, verses 24 and 25, in this commitment that we have, Colossians chapter 3, verse 24 and 25. Here's what we all have to think about. Okay, we're not marrying a perfect mate, are we? Now, in saying all of this, by the way, there are times that marriages should be dissolved or there should be a separation. So we understand that from the Bible. There can be separations, and God can actually have two people who are married, and they are married, and they separate, and they're still married. But God says there's no problem in the separation. They cannot get along. They cannot reconcile. And there may be reasons where they need to stay separated until there can be a reconciliation. So the Bible talks about that. You read it in Paul's writings in 1 Corinthians 7. And then also, there is a license given by God for a marriage to be dissolved. There just is, because it takes two to tango. It does, and under some circumstances, marriages should be dissolved. In fact, we could go to 1 Corinthians 7, and it talks about God wanting two people to live in peace. Now, they may not be living in peace, and that may not be a reason for the marriage to be dissolved. It may be just a situation that needs to be reconciled. But there are. So we don't want to say that there never is a time that a marriage cannot be dissolved, because it can be. But Colossians 3, 24 and 25. Whatever you do, verse 23, do it heartily as to the Lord, not to men. This is what I explain in marriage situations, that when you're married, the person you're marrying is not perfect. So you follow God's way as if you're married to Jesus Christ. Do it not to your mate. I don't deserve my wife showing me the love and submission that God requires of her. And by the way, submission only in the Lord, okay? If you men would ask your wife to go down and sign a paper to buy a $240,000 vehicle, and I'm going to get way up there, and she says no, and you say, well, you have to submit to me. And the answer is, no, she doesn't. Absolutely not. She does not have to submit any more than if you put a gun in her hand and told her to shoot somebody. She does not have to submit to that. I mean, it becomes ridiculous, doesn't it? At what point does she not submit to you? And the point is when she thinks it's not right. Okay? We men don't determine that. The wife determines when it is wrong to submit. And it shouldn't be over at all whether I get to drive to Columbia or she gets to drive to Columbia. And I was kidding about having a major marital, no, it wasn't at all. It was a fun thing. I hope all of you understand that. It was a fun thing. And basically she said, well, I'll be out in the car beforehand. So I just made sure that she was in the house. And I said, honey, could you make sure and get a couple things for me as I went out in the car, got in the driver's seat, started the car, and then she came out and she went. And so she has to drive home. No, she doesn't. Those types of things, you can have fun things. But the woman decides, men. The woman decides when she is not going to submit. Because she may think that before God that this is not right. And we can't change that. We men can't change that. Now, what about the other way around? And we are to submit to, as if we're submitting to the Lord and not to men. Okay? Well, what about the wife saying, well, he has to love me in this situation. He has to be patient with me. I know I'm overspending the checkbook by $2,000 every single year. We're going in the hole. And the answer is, does a husband have to be patient with that? No way. Is that loving in the Lord? And the answer is no. No. Now, if she's working and she's making that money, fine. But if you're going into debt, even though the wife may be working and you're going into debt, that still is a problem. Unless, you know, we're talking about a debt that you shouldn't go into. There may be a house debt, there may be an automobile debt, but not too many more debts than that. If it's a brand new Samsung 65-inch TV, you know, and it's only $2,500, $2,700, what are you going to do? Am I going to be patient if she goes and buys that? It depends on if the Chiefs are winning or losing, I suppose. No, of course not. But you work together on that, and it's like a husband. You're not going to say, I'm going to be patient with my wife as she spends us into a major hole that we'll never get out of. You just, those things are ridiculous, aren't they? So you have to think, well, what is love? And there's patience, but also love is outgoing concern in every way. Love does no harm, right? And so I would actually be harming the whole family by allowing such huge debts that when are you going to pull out of them? So love does no harm. So the husband's not going to allow the wife to harm herself or the family and vice versa. It's just not going to happen. And now, by the way, we can all make some financial mistakes. I'm not saying that. We can all, get into situations where we think it's good, it's going to make money, and then somebody else doesn't pay us, or, there's all types of situations. So I'm not going to get into detail here, I'm just hitting principle. And certainly, the husband is going to make business decisions that should be good business decisions. So again, we're counsel. If we want wisdom, we get counsel. And I hope all of us understand that in a multitude of counsel, there's wisdom. In a multitude of counsel, there's wisdom, right? So we never make a major decision that's going to involve a lot of money without getting a lot of counsel. A multitude is more than one. And a first counselor, by the way, is our mate. First counselor is always our mate. And our second counselor would be another counselor who knows a lot about the subject and is a multimillionaire themselves. Is not, you know, you don't go to prison to find the guy that's been put there because of so much debt to get counsel on how to stay out of debt. I don't think so. Okay. So commitment. Leave your father and mother. Leave your father and mother and cling to your wife. Genesis 2, 23 and 24. And I'll have one more point after this, actually. Genesis, this is a major law. And I guess we could have said there's a law of love, law of commitment, and the law of leaving your father and mother. This is a law because God said to do it. Verse 23 says, Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore, now what did we just read in 23? Because the two are now one new family unit. One new family. Bonded together as husband and wife. Genesis 2, verse 24. Therefore, because now you are one family unit, no longer bonded to your mom and dad, bonded. You know, you're honoring your mom and dad, and you are respecting your mom and dad, respecting, hopefully, if you can, but definitely honoring your mom and dad. But now you're leaving, doesn't mean you can't stay in the same house, you're leaving your mom and dad, but you're forming a new family unit. Is what it's talking about here. Where there is a new, the father of the man is no longer the head of that new unit. And the mother-in-law, this is where problems come, mothers-in-law, they're the ones that get the, like this, because it's natural for a mother to mother. I think that's why, and you want to make sure that the lady now who's taking over your place is doing the job that you would do. And so I think that's where natural problems can come in. When our son was first married, we were calling him every week. And we started kind of picking up after about 3 phone calls, 4 phone calls, that maybe we shouldn't be calling every single week. Are you feeding our son? Everything going well? Are you submitting to our son? Are you? Of course, we didn't ask that, but it was too much. It was too much for a new family unit. That's the time they needed the space. In fact, when I had Spokesman's Club and we had a new newly married couple, I would not allow the man to be in Spokesman's Club. You got a wife at home, you spend time with her. You get to know her, the two of you. Work together. I just wouldn't allow it. It's you can join next year, the following year, but they need to spend time together. Therefore, shall a man leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Parents should never interfere with the marriage. Now, that can be taken too far if there's going to be some major problems in the marriage. We all understand that. The parents should not be interfering. You know, the young woman should not be running for anything that comes along to the parents in a negative way for advice. Positive advice, right spirit, right attitude, you know, finding out from mom, well, you know, what did you do when dad did this? But never a negative, my husband's doing this or whatever. Okay. You don't run to your parents for that. You're one flesh. You work everything out as much as you can, as you possibly can. My wife never went to her mother. Father was not in the church. Never went to her mother one time. She always backed me up anyway. Actually, but she never needed to. I shouldn't say that in the wrong way. I don't mean that there's need. I never needed to go to my parents to find out what I needed to do in our marriage with Mary. And I'm trying to say that in the right way, not to say, oh, we were so great. No, we had to work out many marriage situations. We just did. But she never felt like picking up the phone and saying, Mommy. And I never felt like picking up the phone and saying, Daddy, Mommy, you know. It just didn't happen. We are one flesh. You work out the situation as well as you can. Unless there's a traumatic situation, then, of course, it's to be dealt with. If the guy should go to jail or the gal, and you think of abuse by a male, but I've heard of many cases of female abuse, too. That's not normal, but that happens. But if there's abuse, then that's a different matter, totally. But you are one flesh. You know about each other more than your parents know about the two of you. The two of you are one flesh. And you each know where you're going, what you're doing. And by the way, when it talks about submission, I know of one case where one man said to me, well, you know, I always told my wife when she goes out that she must be in by midnight. Is that asking too much? And I said, is she your child or your wife? She's your wife. You married her. You don't say, okay, let's see here. You got to be in by midnight. And it's just like the teenagers. We'll give them 11:45. But since you're my wife, I'll give you till midnight. It's like, no. She's your wife. You know, if you don't trust her that much, then don't send her out with any money. But if, I'm kidding about that, but you know what I mean. But you have to, you're looking at each other as as bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh, the two of you together. You communicate, you talk things out, you know, you work things out. It may take time, it definitely will. But you work as much as you can at it. Last point. Know your roles. Know your roles. Genesis 2:18. And there's so many points, but these are laws. If we don't know our role in marriage, then we're going to make mistakes. We have to know the parameters of what God has established. The Lord said, it's not good that the man should be alone. Okay, guys, is it good that we should be alone? Yeah, most of the time, no. Again, there are reasons that women don't marry and reasons men don't marry. But God said overall, it is good. A man should not be alone. Why shouldn't we men be alone? The answer is we need help. Okay, that's what God said. We need help. And if we men don't understand that, then we don't even know our role. See, we're just half there. And the other half is there, okay? And God said, I'm going to give you help, and you use that help. My wife says, I can help you. Anything. I lose something, my attitude is, it'll turn up in the next year. And my wife's attitude is, I'll help you find it. No, it's okay, I'll find it myself. We men, you know. We can do everything on our own. No, man, when we deny the help, and I don't like to be mothered. Now, I'm not talking about the woman becoming a mother at all, and I've said this many times. Don't mother your husband, you know, but help your husband. But if we deny the God-given nature and skill and gift of a woman who's made to be a helper, we're breaking a law. And if you go to Proverbs 31, you see what a woman can do. A woman, according to what Paul told Timothy, manages the house. A woman, according to Proverbs 31, goes out and buys a field. In other words, she is quite an industrious woman. She has maids. She is a woman who just kind of, you think, oh, she took over. No, she's helping her husband in many different ways. Not every woman's going to go out and buy real estate, but you can see what the parameters are there. Some men just keep their wives, and I'm not talking, well, I'd have to look closely here before I say that in the church, but most men in the church, you know, don't put a wife in a box, but it can be done. It can be done, and it shouldn't be done. So know your roles, and not every woman has the same skills to help in everything that somebody else might be able to do. Each, and we husbands and we wives choose one another, and we spend time doing so that we can have a good marriage. But know your roles. She is a helper. Ephesians, or the ceremony, said, will you provide for her? We have love and submit. So I'm going to give you, end with this, this four, what would we call it? Just this equation. We'll just call it an equation. You have a wife who is to submit and be a helper, right? Those are two basics. The wife is to submit and be a helper. The husband is supposed to love and be a provider. Now, if you put that up on the screen here, and it's not a chalk screen, so I won't do it, but basically what I've had here is the woman should be submitting to a loving provider. That'll work every time. If the woman is submitting to a loving provider, if the woman has a submissive spirit and the husband is a loving provider, what more can you ask? And the husband is loving a submissive helper. But she can't help you if you're not providing. She can't help you provide if you're not providing in the first place. Unless there's illness, there are problems that come along. Now, I'm not hitting every single problem. Some women can work outside the home and help that way. And some women do all the help inside the home, and both are fine. They're fine. And by the way, with roles, if a woman is working full-time, the roles are going to be a little different. The woman doesn't work full-time and then come home with her husband drinking a beer, watching TV, while she then cleans the entire house and makes all the, you know, whatever, makes the meals, and he just sits on his gluteus maximus and does nothing. So you get this right relationship, and it works. You submit, hopefully, to a loving provider. That means the husband needs to be a loving provider. You love a submissive helper. The wife is submissive in the Lord, and she is a helper. And that works perfectly. There's still going to be problems that come along that need to be worked out, but it works out so much better when you have that situation. Do we fail? Is the husband always going to be loving? And the answer is, I can tell you personally, no. Going to make mistakes. Is he going to have the right intent and motive but goof up royally? Yeah. Absolutely. Does the wife want to submit and sometimes will make the wrong judgment and not submit when she should? Yeah, that'll happen sometimes. Sure. Absolutely. There are faults. But if both husband and wife are striving to fulfill their role before God, if their main objective is to be in the kingdom of God, and this is who we're trying to please, then it's going to work out. And there's a lot of overcoming to do in the marriage. It's not going to be where we overcome our problems right away. But in time, it works out if you keep practicing. Practicing makes perfect. Practicing makes perfect. You stumble, but as in anything, practice, and God sees what we're doing. So we overcome the problems we have in marriage. We strive to obey God. We are working for God, not for ourselves. And it works out. So that's first of six laws out of 2,422. No, those are basics, and I'm sure you can add to them. So have a happy marriage.